Tonight's shiur is on this week's parsha, which is Parshas Chayisara. And the topic of tonight's shiur is inside Ma'aras HaMachpelah. So tonight we're going to discuss the psukim and an interesting gemara that takes up a story where one of the chazal walk into the Ma'aras HaMachpelah. And we'll try to understand the nature of Ma'aras HaMachpelah on a deeper level. So unfortunately, my Bar Ilan USB was broken, so we're going to have to use the Safari sheets tonight. But I prefer the Bar Ilan. So let's start with the main source. So we have some English on the side, so it should make things easier. But the main source is the Pasuk in this week's Parsha. It's the first one, Bereishis Chaf Gimel Tes. And Avram is talking to Ephron and the Bnei Ches, and he says, V'yitan li es me'aras ha'machpelah asher lo asher b'kteh sadehu b'chesef malei yitanena li b'sochachem l'achuzas kover. So Avram requests that Ephron sell him Ma'aras HaMachpelah, and he's willing to pay him whatever the amount is in order to use it as a burial for Sarah. So Rashi explains in the next source, HaMachpelah, so why is it called Ma'aras HaMachpelah? Ma'ara means a cave, and Machpelah means double. So why is it called that? So Rashi quotes a Gemara, and he says, Bayis v'aliyah al-gabav. So the first idea is that the cave itself was structured in a two-story manner. The bottom, there's a bottom story and a top cave on top of it. And that's why it's Machpelah, it was doubled. The other, Davar Acher, Shekfula Bezugos. The other approach, which we'll see in the Gemara, is that Ma'aras Machpelah is called Machpelah because there were twos. There were pairs of twos that were buried inside Ma'aras Machpelah, and they were, who were they? They were Adam Chava, Avraham and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, and of course Yaakov and Leah. So there are two different approaches as to why the cave that the patriarchs and the matriarchs were buried in is called Ma'aras HaMachpelah. One is because of the structure of the cave, and the other is because of what was inside the cave. But there's another approach that the Ramban brings down, and we're going to come back to this Machlokas and try to explain it. But there's another approach. The Ramban, in the next source, he says in the beginning, V'tam b'iten li v'yitznena li. So why does Avram use the words tainly, give to me? She'echshov osa kematana im bekesef mole echana mimenu. He was trying to make it known to the Ephron that it would feel like a gift if he just let Avram purchase it. So that's why the Torah uses the term tainly, like a matana. And then he says, V'alkein lo hizkir lashon mechira. Avram never says to sell it to me. He never uses the term mechira. Rather, he uses etnena. V'chein ochel b'kesef tashprenu, mayim b'kesef titin li, shamayim hanesunim b'matana eten b'hem kesef, oshi derech haloshon lahaskir kein b'mechiros. So there's two possibilities. Either Avram was trying to express to Ephron that he's gracious and appreciative of Ephron selling him the land and he feels like it's a present. And the other is that that's how people call sales, they use the word matana or tainly, so that's common. So that's really not relevant to our situation. So we'll go on in the Ramban. The next part of the Ramban gets into Ma'aras HaMachpelah. So he says, Ma'aras HaMachpelah, Loshon Rashi, Bayis Va'aliyah Al-Gabav, Davar Acher Shekfula Bezugos. He quotes Rashi verbatim, and Rashi said that either the structure of the cave was doubled, like a two-story cave, or that it was doubled in terms of the people buried inside. Ve'inenu Nachon. But the Ramban says that's not the case. Ki hakasuv amar sdei Ephron asher b'machpelah. The pasuk says that it's the field of Ephron which is in Machpelah. V'inehu shem hamakom asher bo hasadeh. So that was the name. Machpelah was the name of the place that the sadeh was in, that the field was in. It wasn't the cave itself. V'ein tzorech levakesh tam l'shem hamakomos. There's no reason to figure out why places are called by their certain names. So the Ramban says the pshat is that Ma'aras HaMachpelah was not really just the cave, it was the whole field, it was just called Machpelah. But he says, V'avreshis Rabba amru shekafal kadosh baruch hu komaso shel adam harishon v'kavru besocha. But the Medrash says that that Adam harishon was very tall and he was folded over in order to bury him in Ma'aras HaMachpelah. So that's the reason why it's called Machpelah, the idea of kaful, of being bent over and doubled over, was why it was called Ma'aras HaMachpelah. Ve'aldaitam hayakol makamahu nikra kein me'olam. And then the name of the field and the cave became called Machpelah because of this, from the beginning of time. But nobody knew why. V'him lo yadu taimo. They didn't know why it was called Machpelah. Ki Ephron b'dmei asadem macha lo akol al daito. She'ein sham kever. Ephron didn't know that there was a burial spot there. V'hinei Avram lo haya mevakesh rak limkor lo hama'ara. And Avram just wanted the cave. Ki hi b'ktzeh hasadeh. It was at the end of the field. V'yishar hasadeh lo Ephron. So Avram was content with just buying the cave itself because he knew that Adam was buried there, but nobody else knew that there was a burial spot there, that Adam was there, and they didn't know why it was called Machpelah because of that reason. So Avram wanted to just buy the Ma'ara, and then it says, keep going in the Ramban, V'hu amar lo derech musar o mirma sheyitin lo asade v'amara asherbo. And Ephron replies to Avram that he's going to sell him both. Asher ki lo yitachin l'adam nichbad kamosh etiyelo hama'ara l'achuzos kever v'hasadeh yelo acher. It's not appropriate, Ephron was saying to Avram, that a man of his stature only have the gravesite and not the field surrounding it. V'avram sameach b'chach v'kana akol b'damim shehizkir lo. So Avram was satisfied with Ephron's suggestion, and he buys everything. Okay, so now we have three different possibilities as to why Ma'aras HaMachpelah is called Machpelah. One is because of the structure of the cave. The second approach, which Rashi brings down based on the Gemara, is because of the Zugos. And somehow the Ramban argues with the Gemara and Rashi, and he says that it was because Adam was buried and he was doubled over because he was so tall, and the idea of being doubled over was why the whole place was called Machpelah. So you have three different approaches. So we're going to try to understand these approaches in a deeper fashion. And we'll see that there's a Gemara that hopefully will open it up a little bit. So if we look in, if anybody has any questions, just stop me as usual. But if we look in the actual source of the Gemara, I feel like it's important to go to the source itself, which Rashi quotes. It's Erevin Nun Gimel Amud Aleph. And the Gemara says, Ma'aras HaMachpelah, Ravu Shmuel Chad Omar Shnei Batim Zelif Nim Mizeh. The Chad Amar Bayis Valdia Al Gabav. So it's the same machlokas as Rashi. So one side says that it was two stories, and the other one says that really it was two caves, one was in front of the other. Bishlama Lamanda Amar Ze Al Gav Ze Hainu Machpelah. So according to the one who says that it was two stories, that's why it's Machpelah. El Lamanda Amar Shnei Batim Zelif Nimize Mai Machpelah. So the one who says that there was an inner cave and an outer cave, what is Machpelah? Shekfula bezugos, because it was doubled with pairs of other, like I said before, Adam and Chava, and all the Avos and Imos. Mamre kiras arba, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak kiras arba, zugos Adam v'chava Avram v'sar Yitzchak v'rifka Yaakov v'leia. And you see a raya for this because we say kiras arba. Why was it called arba? Because there are four pairs. So it's the same machlokas that Rashi brings down. Well, so if we look in Rashi on the Gemara on the next page, he says the same thing. He says Shnei Batim, Hayu ba zelif nimizeh bayis valiyah havi kfula b'shtei tikros. It was doubled with two ceilings. Aval Shnei Batim lo shayach b'hu lashon kfula. He says that if you have two houses, one on the outside and one on the inside, then the lashon of double doesn't make sense. Shekfula b'zugo shenikbru kulon ish v'ishto dahainu zug dichsiv shama kavrus Avram mesara. So they were all buried in pairs, and that's why it's called Ma'aras HaMachpelah. So I just wanted to look at the Gemara itself in order for us to get the facts from the source itself. But again, we'll come back to it. So it's important to remember in our minds that the three different approaches. What's also interesting is that the Ramban argues with the Gemara vehemently, and he calls it the name of the place when you see that Rav and Shmuel were the ones who argue about the Ma'ara itself and why it was called Machpelah. So it's interesting. But again, we have three different approaches as to why it was called Machpelah. So now we're going to go through just a very bizarre Gemara and hopefully try to gain insight. And that's why the shiur is called Inside Ma'aras HaMachpelah. So let's see what the Gemara says. So it says, Rav Ben Na'ah hava kemitzayin ma'arta. So Rav Ben Na'ah was going into burial caves to mark them off, because he wanted people to know where the tumah was of these caves. So this is what this guy was doing. Kimata lema'arta da Avraham, when he got to the cave that Avram was buried in, Ashkichei le'Eliezer Eved Avraham, dekai kameh, bava. So he saw that Eliezer, the servant of Avraham, was standing in front of the cave. So Amar le, Maika Eved Avraham. So Rabbanah said, what's Avram doing right now? And Eliezer responded, Amarle, Ga'ani b'chanfa de Sarah, v'kama aina le bereshe. He's lying in the arms of Sarah, and Sarah is checking, examining his head, which is weird. So Amarle, so he said back to him, Zil emale b'na kayabava. So b'na said to Eliezer, tell Avraham that b'na is in front, and he wants to go in. Amarle, zil emale b'na kayabava. I just read that, sorry. Amarle, leil mediyadiyah diyetzer b'hai alma leka ayil ayin v'nafak. So Eliezer and Avraham said to Eliezer, tell him that he can come in because there's no Yetzer Hara in the next world, in Olam Haba, and therefore it was not an inappropriate situation, which we'll see all the Rashbams on this. But the basic story, just to summarize, is that Rabbana, who was one of the Chazal, he was marking off graves and caves, and he comes to Maras HaMachpelah, and he sees that Eliezer is in front. This is way after the time of Avraham and Eliezer. And he wants to go in, so he wants to make sure that Avraham and Sarah, they're decent, and they're dressed appropriately, and they're not... So he finds out that Avraham is in the arms of Sarah, and he doesn't want to go in. He wants to let them know that he's coming in. And Eliezer says, no, it's fine, go in. They're in this situation, but there's no Yetzer Hara in the next world. And then he marks it off, he measures it to mark it off. So that's the Gemara. So the first Gemara... We're not going to do the next Gemara, the next part of the Gemara. We'll do that after we define or explain this part. But the first part of the Gemara is very bizarre, obviously. What exactly... I mean, there's so many questions that we can ask. Eliezer was dead at this point. Avraham was dead. Obviously, this is not literal because, you know, it's highly unlikely that, you know, they were dead. So what's he seeing? What's this Nevuah? What's the purpose of this story? What's the allegory here? So that's what we're going to try to explain. So at first, we have to go through some of the Mefarshim. And if you go on the next page, and keep this page in mind, because we're going to come back to the second part of the Gemara, look at the Tosos. So the question is, what exactly was Rabbana doing? Why was he going around marking off the caves? So the pshat is that he didn't want people who were Tameh to go inside, sorry, who were Tahor to go inside and become Tameh through what's called Tumas Ohel, which means that if you're inside the cave, there's a problem. If you're inside the same room with a Jewish dead body, so typically you become Tameh because of Tumas Ohel. So he didn't want people who are Tahor, who I guess were or Kohanim, that's a Machlokes, to go there and not know that there was buried people there and become Tameh. So Tosos asks a good question. He says, Mitzayin Ma'arta, Mishum de Kever Sosam Tuma Bukas Va'olda Kedamar Bekama Duchti. So we were concerned of the Tuma of Ohel. V'im tomar, so now he asks the question, V'ha ein kivrei ovde kochavim mitamen ba'ohel, mishum de'ein kruin adam. We have a principle in general that when a Kohen is in the same room as a non-Jewish dead body, so there's no tumas ohel, you don't become tame. It's only with a Jewish body in the same room as a Kohen or any individual that you become tame. By a non-Jewish dead body, you're allowed to be in the same room, or you're not. There's a machlokes whether you're allowed to or not, and there's some heterim to go in. That's why there's a heter for a Kohen to go into a hospital, because rove people, at least in America, are non-Jewish. But to be in the same room with a non-Jew, there's no tumas dead body, there's no tumas ohel. It's only, you only become tameh if you touch the dead body of the non-Jew or you move it. And the reason they learn it out from is the pasuk that says adam, and it says atem krim adam, and they're not called adam. So the question is that Avraham, this was before Sinai, so Avraham was technically a non-Jew. So what was he concerned about? So keep going. He says, "De inkrin Adam va'afilu rabbanan de pligi amar arav Shimon va'amri de metame ba'ohel." Even according to Rav Shimon, who argues and says that non-Jewish bodies, dead bodies, are metame ba'ohel, mikol makom bekever shlifnei adibor lomar be'la benazir. By a grave before Sinai, there's no riboy for that. Ela le'inyan negia. Only with regard to touching the actual body. O bekever larabos kever shlifnei adibor umikra dechasav gabi negia marbila hasam. It says o bekever in the pasuk in order to include a kever before Sinai, but the pasuk that they use is referring to negia, touching, not referring to ohel. So the question is, what was he concerned about? So the Gemara says v'yesh lomer de Avraham nikra adam dechsev ha adam agadol. Adam arishon, ulahachi in lamata mikra de Adam. So the answer is that Avram and Adam, even though they were technically non-Jewish, they're still called Adam. The Torah, when the Torah describes a Jewish dead body, it calls it Adam. And we can't consider Avram and Adam non-Adam. We consider them Adam par excellence because of their, we'll see later on, but Avram because of his philosophy and Adam because of who he was, his nature. And we'll see, we'll try to explain this later on. But it's interesting. So the Tosfos is explaining why Rav Benoah was going around in the first place. What's the concern? The concern is that a Kohen or a regular person, a Yisrael, who's Tahor, is going to go in there and become Tameh. And he asks the question, what is the concern? These are non-Jews. They're not Jews yet. It's before Sinai. And his answer is, no, the Pasuk says Adam, man. And even though Avraham and Adam were not technically Jews, but they were still considered Adam. So I think we'll explain it as we go through the story a little bit. But it's, again, important to keep in the back of your mind. But we really have to get to the essence of the story, what the story is trying to teach us. So we're going to go, I know it's a little circuitous, but we're going to go in the Rashbam, read the Rashbam, and take up a side point. And in order to understand the story, we have to put all these ideas together. So the Rashbam, on the next source, it says, Rabbi Benoah Adam Gadol V'chashev Haya. So Rav Benoah was an important guy. Lefichach nitan lo rishus likanes bekivrei tzadikim. Therefore, he was given permission to go in to the gravesite of tzadikim. Aval acher lo, but another person, another guy, would not be allowed to. Kedam rinan, as it says in Chulin, gedolim tzadikim bemisasan yoser mi bechayehen. That tzadikim are greater after their death, or in their death, more so than when they're alive. V'haya nichnas b'ma'aros umodei midas arkan mebefnim. And this is what Rav Benoah would go. He would go into these caves and he would measure them. The Acharkach modem bachutz kenegdan, and then afterwards he would measure outside the cave. The Asa sham tzion sid. Then he would place a marker on it. Kedei lahakir makom atuma, so that everyone would know that this is a place of tuma. V'lo yaviu taharos derech kan shlo yala kever, and that way tahorim wouldn't go there and become tamei because of tumas ohel. So the Rashbam quotes a Gemara in Chulin, and he says that why was Rav Benoah allowed to go into this cave? Oh, because even though a normal person is not allowed to go into the cave, but we say, Gedolim tzadikim b'misasan yosar mibachayen. Because why is a normal person not allowed to go in? Because a tzaddik is greater in his death than he is when he's alive. And there's a Gemara that he quotes in Chulin, which we're going to do and try to understand. What does it mean that a tzaddik is greater in his death than when he's alive? What is this concept, and why? This is the first part of the story. Rav Benoah even going in, getting permission to go into the caves to the Ma'ara Samachpela. Why was he allowed to go in? Because he was great himself. But what's the problem with going in? What exactly is the issue? So if you skip down to the Chulin Daf Zayin Amud Beis, there was a story where Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was arguing with Pinchas Ben Yair, and Pinchas Ben Yair dies. And Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is crying. So if you look in Chulin Daf Zayin Amud Beis, it says Hava Kamavatesh Be Tuva. So what happened was Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was arguing with Pinchas Ben Yair, and he was imploring him. Gaba Tura Banayhu. There was a big mountain that rose up in between them. Bacha Rabbi. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasi started crying. V'amar Ma Bechayehin Kach B'Misasan Alchas Kam V'Kama. So he was saying that tzaddikim in their chayim, in their life, are great. Alchas kam v'kama, after they die. De amar Rav Chama Bar Chanina. So we see this from Rav Chama Bar Chanina. Gedolim tzaddikim b'misasan yoser mibechayehan. So tzaddikim are greater in their death than they are when they're alive. Shenamar, as it says in Melachim, vayihi heim kovrim ish, v'hinei ro es ha-gedud, vayashlichu es ha-ish bekever Elisha. So there was a story in Melachim where they were burying an individual and they saw that a group of troops were coming in. So they immediately threw this dead body into Elisha's tombstone, into the cave or into the burial spot of Elisha. And as soon as this dead body touched Elisha's bones, it rose up and it was alive. And it came alive. So this is the raya, this is the proof that a tzaddik is greater in his death than he is when he's alive. So the question is, what does that mean? And why was Rav Benoah permitted to go in? What's the concept? So we don't have to do all the Rashis, but if you go on the next daf, it says Kovrim Ish. You just have to skip to Kovrim Ish. Rasha haya velo nitan li kaver etel tzadikim. The individual they were burying that they stashed away on Elisha was a Rasha. He was really an evil person, and he wasn't really supposed to be buried next to tzadikim. So that's why there was this miracle that occurred. And if you look in the next Rashi, he says, Vayiga ish ba'atzmos Elisha vayichi, v'ilu b'chayav kishirotza l'hachios b'in ha-shunamis, hutrach lasum piv al piv, v'inav al inav ulvakesh rachamim. When Elisha was alive and he revived the child of the Shunamis, he actually had to put his mouth on the child's mouth and his arms on the child's arms, and he revived the child. This was easier. So it shows you that Elisha was greater in his death than he was when he was alive, because just touching his bones made this dead body come alive. So I want to try to understand what exactly is this concept that tzaddikim are greater in their death than when they're alive. And why is it that only special individuals are allowed to go into these caves, like Rav Binah? So that's the first. So the first idea is that I want to express is to try to answer that concept. What is the svar? What is the theory to explain this concept? So I was thinking of a concept that we see in America, in literature, the concept of legend. I was thinking about that idea, that when a person is alive, a lot of times, it's hard for us to really understand the idea, the greatness of the person, because we get used to it and we get accustomed to it. But after they're done, so then the legend usually grows and the person's actual accomplishments become greater and greater, typically by a great person. And this is a good sports analogy for, even though this is a women's share, this is a good sports analogy by baseball, for example. When you have, you know, Hall of Fame players, when they're playing and you get used to them playing, there is an allure to them as great players, but the more you get used to something, the less of an allure it is. But after a player retires and you see that they're gone and they're not playing anymore, then A, you miss them more, and B, you reflect on their greatness more, and the legend of how great they were seems to grow and become exaggerated over time, like Babe Ruth, for example. So all these legends become greater over time. So I think the idea is, by tzaddikim, that the tzaddik's impact becomes greater over time. Because the longer we are away from them, the more the ideas that they represented and the stories and the nisim and everything that they've done becomes more impactful as we move away from them. As opposed to when you're around them in the generation, it's you do appreciate them, but you also, there's a part of every human being that becomes accustomed. But when they're gone, after they die, so there's a loss there, and the loss causes you to appreciate them more and to remember them in a grandiose manner. So I think that's what the Gemara is alluding to. It would be inappropriate for a Rasha to be in the same burial spot as Elisha, because the idea of Elisha was now more powerful than when he was alive, and we don't want to corrupt the concept or the idea of Elisha. We don't want a Rasha, people confounding the two, after Elisha's death, especially since his impact is so strong after he died. We don't want it to affect our ability to learn or to gain from a tzaddik. So the idea of the nace, of this dead body coming alive, of this Rasha, was to express the concept that when a person's dead, when a tzaddik is dead, his image and his image should not be tarnished. We have to be careful, especially careful, to not tarnish the image of the tzaddik, because it's more powerful even than when the tzaddik was alive. People miss the tzaddik more. They reminisce about the tzaddik. They have a grandiose idea of the tzaddik. So all those things happen after the tzaddik dies. And I think that's what the Gemara is expressing by Rav Binah, that his greatness allowed him to go in, meaning he was on the level where the idea of him, or the image of him, the concept of him, wouldn't be one which would take away from the greatness of the Avos. So therefore, the Gemara is teaching us that Rav Binah, he had Rishus. He was allowed to go in. That's the first part of the story. But of course, so that could be a literal part of the story where he actually went into the kever. But then we get to the issue of Eliezer and Avram being in the arms of Sarah. So what are we supposed to learn from there? So if we go back to the last page on the Rashbam, it says, Ashkechel Eliezer. Desanya b'maseches derech eretz deshiva tzadikim kayamen shalom mesu v'kachashe b'hadayu Eliezer eved Avram. So there's, in Maseches Derech Eretz, there's a medrash that says seven tzaddikim never died, and one of those tzaddikim was Eliezer. The interesting thing is it doesn't mention Avram and Sarah, but in the story, Avram and Sarah, I believe it doesn't mention Avram and Sarah, but in the story, Avram and Sarah are alive as well. But what is this idea of Eliezer still being in front of the cave of Avram and Sarah? What are we supposed to gain, and how do we understand it, and what's it teaching us? So let's try to understand that. So we go to, I know we're skipping around, and usually it's clear with the Bar Ilan, but we'll go back to the Rashbam on the next daf where we were before. And the Rashbam goes through the back and forth with the Rabbi Nah and Eliezer. It says, Amar le Rabbi Binah le Eliezer. So Rabbi Nah said to Eliezer, Zil emole le Avraham. Go tell Avraham, Binah kayabava, that Binah is outside. Vitain lo rishus lekanes, and give me permission to go in. So Amar le Leol, he said back to him, go in. De in kan chutzpah de ignina be'anpe be'chanfa de Sarah. He said it's not disrespectful that Avraham is in the arms of Sarah. There's no yitzhara. They didn't have to be tzanua. They didn't have to be modest in front of Rav Binah. So that's the... And then it says, Hachi garsinan al ayin menafik. He went in and he measured and then he left. Nichnas Rav Binah v'nistak al midas orech hama'ara. V'yatzav achach tzayin mibachutz. So he went into the cave, he measured it, and then he went outside and he placed the marker down. So what is the point of this story? So we have to understand the first part of the Gemara. So why is Eliezer still alive? Why is Avram in the arms of Sarah? What do we learn from this? And what does it mean that they didn't have to beat Sanua in front of him? So I think the idea is a deep idea, because this Gemara is very allegorical. So why was Eliezer there? So I think that the concept of this Olam Haba in the framework of the Avos, of Avram and Sarah, is that the life of Avram and Sarah wasn't drastically different in Olam Haba as it was in this world. Meaning, in this world, Avraham dedicated his life to the pursuit of knowledge and teaching others about knowledge. And the concept of Eliezer serving him, that was Eliezer's great, that was his state of greatness. That was his ideal state. So the concept is that because these individuals were attached to knowledge in the way that they were, so their status and their philosophical status after death was the same as it was in life. And Eliezer is again the servant, because that's where he gained the most knowledge, and that's what he enjoyed the most. So his position is the same. Obviously, this is all kaviyachol, but his position is the same in Olam Haba, because that was the ideal. That was his ideal in the framework of attaining knowledge, attaining ideas, concepts about God, about Hashem, through Avram. And Avram and Sarah also. So what's the idea of Avram and Sarah in Avram's and Sarah's, Sarah's arms? So what do we learn from here? So I think that there's a deeper idea from that expression. And I think the concept is tied to an idea that I heard in a different shir about the nature of marriage. And the idea was that there are two parts of man. There's the public persona and there's the private persona. And whenever an individual goes outside, he acts one way because he's trying to impress others. He's trying to give off a certain impression of himself. But when he's alone with his wife, that's the private person. That's the real person, the true person. So when a person's outside, he's public. He's always concerned about his image. When he's inside, at least if you have a good marriage, when you're inside, you can be yourself. You don't have to worry about how you appear and what your image is. And if you are concerned about that, then you're going to have problems. But the idea is that the ideal marriage is one where people feel comfortable with each other and, they could be themselves. So perhaps the idea of Olam Haba being expressed by Avram and Sarah is that the same idea, which is that a lot of times we confuse the reward of Olam Haba and we attach it to the public persona of the person. Like we see a rabbi in public and we see him speaking and we think that he's this great person and we attach all this psychology and emotions to this person. And in our minds, we believe that that's the individual that's getting Olam Haba. But deep down inside, the reality of the person, the underlying person, is really in private with his family, with his wife. And that's the real person, not the person in public, not the person outside speaking and coming out and wearing certain clothing. And all those things are irrelevant to the reality, to the underlying person. The underlying person is the one in private with his wife. So perhaps the idea by Avram and Sarah being together in the Ma'ara is teaching us that the greatness of Avram and Sarah wasn't the public persona of them, but it was really the private. Even in private, the reality of their greatness was expressed in private. And that's the idea, that's the concept, that we should think of Avram and Sarah not just in the framework of their public personas, but also in the framework of them privately. When we go to Maaseh Machpelah and reflect on Avram and Sarah, it's not just about Avraham proselytizing, going out, but his greatness was expressed even in private, even with Sarah in the private sphere, in the private realm. And I think that's a mistake that people make. People always attach certain images and certain ideas to the public person, because we don't usually see them in private. But the real schar is for the underlying private person. That's where the schar comes from. That's where a person really gains olam haba, and that's what the story is teaching us about Avram and Sarah. Why was Avram in her arms? I don't know why she was checking his head, but the idea of Avram being in her arms is the concept that they were comfortable in private. It was an expression of their private lives. And the idea in Olam Haba is that a person is judged more on his private life than his public persona. So perhaps that's the idea. So there's a second part of the story, very important. So if we go back to the Gemara, we'll just define the second part. It's just as interesting as the first part. So the second part, go back to the Gemara, Bava Basra and then Chesem Nala, so you have to go back a couple of pages. We stopped at in the middle, and it says, Kimata lema'arta de Adam Arishon, when Rabbana went to the cave of Adam Arishon, Yatusa Baskol, the Amra, Nistakelis bid must yokni, bid yokni atzma altistakel. So there was a Baskol, a voice that came about and said, You're looking at, you know, my image. Don't look at my image. Habi'ino lets yune ma'arta kemida. So he said back to the Baskol, I have to measure the cave. He says that the outer cave, just like this, it's the same dimensions as the outer cave, so you don't really have to go in here. And according to the one that says that it was two stories, they were both exactly the same, identical in their dimensions. So Hashem is saying to Rabbana, don't go any further, you don't have a right to look at Adam. So Amarav Bina Nistakalti Bishne Akevav, I saw the two heels of Adam, bedomim l'shnei galgalei chama. It looked like two burning suns, the heels of Adam. And he says, hakol bifnei Sarah kekof bifnei Adam. Sorry, hakol bifnei Sarah kekof bifnei Adam. So everyone before Sarah was like a monkey, before Adam. Sarah bifnei Chava kekof. Sarah was like a monkey in front of Chava, bifnei Adam. And before man, Chava bifnei Adam kikof, and Chava was like a monkey before Adam, bifnei Adam, Adam bifnei Shechina kikof bifnei Adam. So Adam before the Shechina is like before the divine presence is like a monkey compared to a human. So the idea is that, let me just read that again. Sorry, just make sure it says Hakol bifnei Sarah kikof bifnei Adam. So everyone compared to Sarah was like a monkey compared to humans because Sarah was so beautiful. And then it says, Sarah bifnei Chava kikof bifnei Adam. Sarah compared to Chava was like a monkey compared to humans, because Chava was more beautiful than Sarah. Chava bifnei Adam kikof bifnei Adam. But Chava compared to Adam was like a monkey compared to humanity, because Adam was the most beautiful. And then it says, Adam bifnei Shechina kikof bifnei Adam. And Adam, before the divine presence, the Shechina is like a monkey before humans, compared to humans. So what exactly... So this is the second part of the story. What is the idea of Adam being so beautiful, and why do we say that his heels were on fire, like they look like suns, like the sun itself? They're burning suns. What does that mean? What's it trying to teach us about Adam? Okay, so that's the question. So this is the second part of the story. We're going to skip sheets to the part that we talked about it, and you go back to the Rashbam. If you can't follow, it's fine. I'll just read it outside. So it says, "L'ma'arta d'Adam Rishon, k'didarshinu be'erevin, mamre kiras arba, amre yitzchak kiras arba zugos, Adam v'chava, Avram v'sar, Yitzchak v'rivka, Yaakov v'leia." So the kiras arba, why arba? There are four pairs: Adam and Chava, Avram and Sar, Yitzchak v'rivka, and Yaakov and Leia. B'dmus diyokni, Yaakov d'amrinu b'samach shufrei d'Yaakov me'ein shufrei d'Adam Rishon. It says Yaakov, that Yaakov was similar to the, had a similar face to Adam, but Adam was the greatest image. The image of Adam was similar to the image of of the Shechina. So what does that mean? And then it says, Hashem instructs him to not go further because he doesn't have a right to look at Adam. So what exactly is this concept? What's the concept that the story is trying to teach us about Adam HaRishon? And I think the key here to explain it is the idea that his heels were bright as the sun. So what does that mean? So it got me thinking to a different area, and the area, we'll skip the Chidushi HaGados, and we'll go to Shemos Lamed Daled. So the area is in Kisisa. It talks about how Moshe, after Sinai, his face lit up. So if you look in the Pasuk, it says, Vayihi beredes Moshe mahar Sinai, ushnei luchos ha'edos biyad Moshe, berito min ahar, u'moshe lo yada ki karan or pana bedabro ito. When Moshe came down from Har Sinai after getting the Torah, and he had the two luchos, this was after the second, by the second luchos, so he came down, and his face was all bright, and he had these horns, these bright horns. So if you look at Rashi, it's the last source on the sheets. It says ki karan lashon karnayim. It's horns. Sha'or mavik uboli kimin karan. So the light was radiating like a horn from his face, from his forehead. Umehechan zacha Moshe the karnei ahod. Where did he come? Why was he zocha to this? Rabbi Sinu Amru min ha'ma'ara, from the cave. Shenasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu yado al panav, shenemar v'sakosi chapi. Hashem put his hand on Moshe's face, and because of that, his face became radiant with light. So what is the idea of Moshe's face being radiant? So the concept is that Moshe's face reflected the knowledge that he had gained in the Ma'ara, in the cave. And the knowledge that Moshe gained was the highest level of Adam, that Moshe saw or gained the highest level knowledge, and that's the idea of a sakusi chapi. And when Hashem says, I'm gonna sit on the rock, and he says, a man can't see me and live. So that's the whole story over there, that Moshe gained the highest level knowledge of humanity, and that was expressed in his through the light in his face. That was an expression of his level of knowledge, that he had attained the highest level of knowledge possible, almost like a malach. So what's the idea of the Adam HaRishon and his heels, and also why is he compared to the Shechina? So Adam's greatness was in the structure and the tzura of his body. That Adam, the Yedias Hashem, the knowledge that reflected in Moshe was through his face, and the idea that he gained knowledge from Hashem. But the expression of Yedias Hashem of Adam was tied to his physical body, his structure, because he was designed by Hashem himself. So the idea of the radiant suns is similar to the idea of radiance in Moshe's face, which is expressing the fact that his body, the body of Adam, was one that expressed knowledge of Hashem to the highest level, to the highest degree. Why? Because Adam himself was designed perfectly by Hashem. And we see that from the Medrash. The Medrash says that he was very tall. And the Medrash says that everyone, even Chava and Sarah, were like monkeys compared to Adam. What does that mean? It means that Adam, from a physical standpoint, was the fullest expression of the creature, creation of Hashem. And he was almost like a specimen to be studied and to learn about Hashem, how Hashem creates. So that's the concept of the second concept in the story. That's teaching us that the nature of Adam was such that his body was a source of knowledge. His body was a source of Yedias Hashem. And that's why Hashem says you can't look at him, because even looking at him himself required a certain level of man to understand how he was created and how his body reflected this greatness of Hashem. So that's what's being taught to him or being told to him. And I believe that's the second part of the story of this Gemara. So what's inside Maras HaMachpelah? That's the title of the shiur tonight. So this story teaches us two ideas from Rav Banah's visit to the Maras HaMachpelah. One is the concept that when a person is attached to Chachma and his life's attached to Chachma, so his status or his state in Olam Haba is similar. And you see that by Eliezer and Avram and Sarah. But not only that, but that there's two parts to man. There's the public persona and the private persona. And Avraham was in a state of privacy and the private realm. And that's really what man is judged on and what he gets schar for, not the public persona. And the other idea is the concept that that Adam himself was a vehicle of Yedias Hashem. And that's why we say that he couldn't look at Adam. And Neged the Shechina, which is the Shechina is the, what does it mean by the Shechina? The Shechina is where man has an opportunity to gain knowledge of Hashem directly. So Adam was not as great as that, but his body was such that if you studied him as a specimen, almost if you did an anatomy lab on Adam, you would gain the highest level of Yedias Hashem, of God as a creator through Adam. And that's the idea. So let's get back to the beginning of the shir. So we try to understand Maaros HaMachpelah itself. And we said that there's three concepts. Either the Maaros HaMachpelah is tied to the concept of its structure, or it's tied to the concept of the Zugos, or it's tied to the concept of Adam HaRishon and how he was buried. So the idea of Adam HaRishon is teaching us, why was Maaros HaMachpelah, why was it an expression of Adam? Because of this idea that we should always reflect on the perfection of Adam's body as a creature that Hashem created directly. The other side, the middle side, is the Zugos. The Zugos is an idea that we should view the Avos as pairs. We should view, when we go to Maaros HaMachpelah, we should understand them as couples, as in a private relationship. We should understand them not just in a public realm, but also in a private realm. And the first idea is simply that the Mara itself was structured so that people could identify it. And that's the idea of the double cave, that it was unique, that people would know where it is, and they could identify it as the Makom where these individuals were buried. So I believe those are the three approaches to understanding the Machlokes. All right, so that is the end of the shir. Thanks for joining, and have a good Shabbos. Thank you so much. All right, bye.